Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In an age of economic uncertainty, environmental calamity, and divisive politics, it might be easy for those reading the headlines to become cynical or mean. But Josh Gondelman refuses to bow to darker forces. In his new memoir, Nice Try, he leans heavily into the nice. It's a hilarious and often poignant meditation on his kind-hearted worldview, but he can throw an elbow or two. It just might be in, like, soft, squishy cashmere. The writer and comedian has been described as, quote, the nicest man in comedy. He describes himself if a cardigan were a person. He's been charming audiences for years with his warm, sunny delivery and is famous in the Twitter realm for both his quippy personal account as well as the modern Seinfeld handle he created in 2012 with fellow writer Jack Moore. We'll learn more about that in a minute. And by the way, he's received 3 Emmy Awards as a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Josh Gondelman's new book is called Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results, and it is available today. Hi, nice to see you.
Hi, nice to see you too. How are you?
I'm doing great. So your reputation precedes you as a nice guy. So what does that mean to you to be a nice guy?
So I try to be polite. That is like the lead off of nice, right? Polite is like the doorman of niceness. But I'm trying to be kind. I think that's like, because nice is so often thrown around as like a pejorative. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, that was nice. Or like, yeah, he's a nice guy. And it's just like what you say when you have nothing mean to say but nothing good to say. And so I think about that a lot. About trying to be actually nice at a time when, like, often that is used as a kind of a backhanded compliment.
And kind is active. Nice is sort of passive.
Right. Like a nice day, there's, you know, it's just not too hot. Yeah. But like kindness is, I think, trying to go out of your way for people and making a difference to them.
Yeah, I have a T-shirt that said, "Be kind, it's gangster." Sort of my motto in life.
That's not bad.
So I want to give people an example of, I think, that really encapsulates your comedy, how quick you are, how quick-witted, how you can defend yourself as well. There's a moment on your comedy album, Dancing on a Weeknight, when you're interrupted by someone. It's sort of a heckler. And your response is very, very much you. Let's take a listen.
I'll tell you what. If you have any other alternate punchlines over the course of the evening, Just write them down on a little piece of paper. Walk to the Gowanus Canal and throw the paper into it. But I'm glad you're here.
Okay, can you dissect the 3 parts of that for me?
Sure. So what had happened was I told a joke and someone called out an alternate punchline. And I didn't want to say something cruel, especially I was recording it for an album, so I didn't want to sour the room. And I didn't, you know, she wasn't trying to be unkind. She just like kind of blurted because she had an idea and like wasn't considering that I would hear it. So she had said, I had a list of names in a joke, and she said, that's like a law firm. And I said, I like my punchline better, but if you have any other ideas. And I just wanted to encourage her to be quiet. So I said, and encourage everyone to be quiet. It was what they call a teachable moment. So I wanted to, you know, encourage the audience, like, hey, look, we had fun with this second, but like, I would really love for this not to happen again because I have some prepared remarks. So I said, as we all heard, if you have any other ideas, write them down on a piece of paper, walk to the Gowanus Canal, throw the paper in. But I was very glad that person was there. I never found out who it was, I don't think. Or maybe a friend was like, oh, it's a friend of a friend. But I just wanted to keep the vibe warm and generous, like, right? Because I was there performing for the audience. But I also wanted to kind of quietly make it clear that, like, this was not going to be a participatory exercise.
And you said teachable moment, which is very interesting because mm-hmm. you were a preschool teacher.
I was.
So where do preschool teacher and comedian intersect?
I think holding the attention of a group that is maybe getting restless or like has an attention span. They have an expectation of being entertained or else the attention span wanes. And so I think that is like a good lesson of both of those activities and professions that translates very well one to the other. And I think that teaching preschool kind of gave me that patience. I think where I might have otherwise, or you know, some performers might be inclined to kind of snap at an audience member who's behaving badly. And I think because I used to stand in front of groups of children, I have like a much more patient vibe for pacing to be able to go, hey, I used to say at shows, if someone was talking in the audience, I would say, hey, 1, 2, 3, all eyes on me. And then I go, that's preschool teacher for shut it. It's my turn to talk.
My guest is Josh Gondelman. The name of his new book is Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results. I can imagine. I want to know what it's like for you in a writer's room, because writer's rooms are kind of have a bad rap right now of being tough places and people not necessarily being that sensitive. And even though you worked on John Oliver, which is a pretty woke show, and you're now working on Desus and Mero, how does one, a nice person, survive in the, I've worked in TV for a long time, there are some not nice people in TV.
Mm-hmm. I've tried to, one thing that has really helped, because I used to worry about that more, getting along in a professional way, especially once I stopped teaching preschool, where everyone is pretty nice. There are relatively few monsters in that field, in my experience. But I think getting confidence that I can do a good job helps, because I can advocate for myself a little better. I can... the work I'm doing is not work that people necessarily would want to pick on as much. Like, so I think just feeling like a capable, a contributing member of the group is really helpful. And also being generous with other people's work, I think, engenders that in them as well, right? Like, if you're the kind of person who's like, hey, I really liked that thing you wrote, it engenders goodwill, even in maybe somebody with a little bit more of a jaded point of view.
Was comedy always the goal in your life, or was it you wanted to be a preschool teacher and you were kind of funny?
No, I came into college thinking I was going to write funny plays, and that was stopped being the goal very quickly, because I didn't want to do, I was too like lazy and busy to do the theater practicum. I was like, I don't want to just like wear black head to toe and then move a fake house back and forth. And so I graduated thinking I was going to write funny, like fiction, short stories, novels. And then I just didn't do that. I spent the next few years not doing that. But I had already started doing stand-up, and I really liked it. And it was kind of a growing part of my, you know, it was, by the time I graduated college, it was kind of a side job that I was doing in and around Boston, where I was living. And so comedy became like more and more, it felt more and more like within my grasp that maybe I could have a career there. And preschool was, I always worked in childcare as like a summer job when I was a kid. And I taught elementary school Spanish for a couple of years while I was finishing college, which I was woefully unqualified for. But I was better at it than the kids. So I was at least that far ahead.
So in this, this is an interesting collection of essays, because some of them are just a page long.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of lists. Have you always been a list maker?
I am a list maker. I love a to-do list. I write them in emails to myself and then just leave them unsent so that they show up on my work computer. They show up on my phone as drafts, and I can like, you know, delete and stuff. And I like lists as like a funny form, because it's just like joke, 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 which is like kind of how my writing brain works. And it was when I was writing this book, my editor, Stephanie, was like so instrumental and important to the creation of the book, because she was the one that was like, no, that's nothing. You have to like tell people what this is. You can't just be like, here's 3 pages of jokes, the end.
So here's one of your lists. I'm going to ask you to read it. It's things that make me feel grown up in order of increasing adulthood. This is Josh Gondelman from his new book, Nice Try.
So here's the list. Walking into a bar without getting carded, voting, writing a letter of recommendation for a friend, wearing a suit of my own volition, not because I'm in court or at a wedding, paying bills, going to bed when I get tired instead of staying up for no reason, not eating all the French fries if I am not hungry for all the French fries, restraining myself from rolling my eyes at my friend's dietary restrictions, voluntary dietary restrictions, not knowing any of the music playing at a younger cousin's bar mitzvah or birthday party, cleaning something in my apartment because I noticed on my own that it was dirty, swearing in casual conversation with my parents without reprisal.
What do those all have in common?
What do those all have in common?
Yeah, like, what about those all make you feel adult?
I think they're all things that I didn't used to be able to do, and now, and over time, I was like, I can just do them. Like, some of the, like, voting, you're not legally allowed mm-hmm. to do until a certain age, and not to brag, but I'm old enough to vote. And some of the other stuff is just stuff that, like, it's, again, it's a confidence issue, and it's a just fluency moving through the world, right? Like, the idea of, like, swearing in front of your parents feels like a thing that was, like, just felt never – I don't do it left and right now, but as a kid, I was like, oh, this is, like – This is
a milestone. Yeah, yeah,
right. Or even it just felt so bad.
Oh,
like,
I see.
Oh, this would be like crashing a car into a someone's house. Like, mm-hmm. That's how bad it felt. And so that's what I think it is. It's all stuff that I like grew up not being able to do for regulatory reasons or self-regulatory reasons.
You also, I mean, you in the book, you give a nod to that you could be a rascal.
Yeah,
occasionally.
I had occasional rascal tendencies, and I wasn't the kid, like, I have nerd face, but, like, I had friends, and we socialized together, and, like, I didn't drink when I was a kid, but I had friends who did, and it wasn't, like, when that would happen, I would always go, well, I can't be around for this, because what if someone calls me to witness in court? Like, I would be around, and, like, I was a designated driver in high school and college a lot, and so, like, I had proximity to trouble without being a lot of trouble myself.
I want to talk quickly about your work on Twitter.
Please.
In 2012, you started this modern Seinfeld, what would you call it?
Just a parody Twitter account.
A parody Twitter account. If Seinfeld was a millennial show now, what's an example of that?
So one of my favorite ones from early on that might have even been before there was an account. It might have just been when I was tweeting from my own account that helped give me and Jack the idea to, like, start the account was Elaine hooks up with her upstairs neighbor and then breaks up with him, and he changes his Wi-Fi password to an insult about Elaine and won't change it back unless she goes on another date with him. So, like, things like that, like, these are just the, like, the breaches of etiquette that are so that fuel so much of the Seinfeld universe.
That's so interesting that you were able to use, and maybe this is when I sound like a grandma, but that Twitter can be now used as a place where comedians can, well, they can get in trouble. That's another mm-hmm. whole story. But that you can get creative.
Yeah. It's really cool to see how people use the format. Like, Natalie Walker and my friend Chris Caligero both post these very funny, like, character videos that are, you know, just short character pieces that are, it's like a different way to use the form. And Natalie was the first person I saw doing that, and she's, like, incredibly talented. And and then there's the parody kind of stuff that we did with Seinfeld. There's ways to, like, include photos and edit photos that are really funny. I generally think such a straightforward way, like, here's a thing that happened and here's a joke about it. And it's so cool to see people really, like, using this medium that was designed for text and coming up with these incredible outside-the-box ways to use it.
So it's interesting because a lot of people think about Twitter as a cesspool mm-hmm. and it's a bad place.
Yeah,
and
also true.
So maybe it's not necessarily Twitter. Maybe it's how you use it.
I think that's
it's about the human.
Totally. I think the problem with it is you can't avoid the cesspool part, right? Like, you can use it for good and you can use it to connect with people, but that, like, garbage element is always there. I say in the book that, like, I had such a big career surge that came from this modern Seinfeld Twitter account. And then I met my wife. Like, the first interaction I had with my wife was on Twitter before I even met in person. And so I really think Twitter feels to me like, I can't recommend that other people get on it, but I said it's like if I fell into a sewer, an open sewer, and I found $100. And then, like, 2 years later, I fell into the same sewer and found a diamond ring, where it's like, it's still a sewer, but it's a sewer that's been very good to me.
You are an optimist. It's true. It's not just in the book. The name of the book is Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results. It's by Josh Gondelman, and we can see your work on Jesus and Mero now.
Absolutely. We're back October 14th, I believe.
Excellent. Hey, Josh, it was really nice to meet you.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I'll meet you at the top of the hour.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.